Hey, Blenders, on this week's show, we're reviewing Captain America Brave New World, and Jeff Trammell, the showrunner of Disney's Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, joins us to discuss.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome. Welcome to episode number 338 of Real Blend, a podcast that has been telling you from the very start that Anora was going to win Best Picture, and you haven't listened to us. And we're right. And here we go. Anora's going to win Best Picture on this week's show. Hello, everybody. We're welcoming. We're reviewing Captain America: Brave New World, which half of us have had a chance to see. And Jeff Trammell, the showrunner of this incredible new program called Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, which is available on Disney Plus, has joined the show to geek out with me about all things Spider-Man. Heavy Marvel show this week. I guess that's what happens when the MCU returns back. I'm Sean O'Connell. I'm managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. And I have been for many a year, joined as always by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C., and Gabe Kovach in the producer's chair. Gentlemen, good to see you all. How are we doing?
Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you as well.
Too. It's been a busy, today's been a particularly, we're recording this on a Wednesday. This will come out on Friday. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody listening.
Yes.
If you celebrate. But yeah, it's been a busy interview day. Jake and I think we had like three junkets each today.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, it was a day. It's what we do.
So what's I know we're going to review Captain America. So last night, Tuesday, recording this on Wednesday, was the premiere in L.A. And I sat down with Anthony Mackie and Danny Ramirez and it's Julius Ona. Is that?
Wait, I didn't even make that connection. They were in your studio?
No, well, they flew to D.C.
Oh.
I think last night after the premiere landed, and then I talked to them this morning in D.C.
That's
and so, like,
crazy.
Fresh off the premiere. And
yeah.
Julius is actually, he grew up in Arlington, Virginia.
Okay.
And so he had that connection here. They also shot part of the movie in D.C. So
I met him at the
junket. The interview.
He was great. Really nice.
Julius.
Yeah.
Yeah. Am I pronouncing his last name right?
Ona. Okay, cool. Julius Ona.
Great guy. And where we did the interview today was right over where Sam is running. I think in the footage that we saw, Sean, I don't want to give too much away, but
I'm curious as to, and this is a off podcast conversation. Having seen the film, I'm curious what footage you guys saw.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, why don't we, when we review the movie, Sean
talk
and I have
that.
Seen the footage. We can talk about our, because I had Winter Soldier vibes from the footage. So we can dive into that in our review anyway.
Love it. Cool.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. So either you're listening to us where you get your podcast needs met, or you're watching us on YouTube. Hello. Good to see you guys. Thank you for joining us. Head down, give us a like and a subscribe. Share this show with a movie loving friend of yours. We're at youtube.com/RealBlendPodcast. Again, you can listen to us in an audio format if you want to, all the different places that you get your podcast needs met, whether it be Spotify or Apple or Pod something. I don't know. Where do people listen to podcasts? And if you'd like to sign up for Real Blend Premium, friends, it gets you an ad-free version of the show. So check the description for information on where you can sign up. Okay, so before we get to Captain America, which is the big Marvel movie of the week, I had a chance to sit down with Jeff Trammell. So I was really excited for this conversation because obviously I'm a Spider-Man junkie and this is a fresh new take on Spider-Man. And then Marvel did something that they don't normally do. They gave me all 10 episodes of the first season, which is really cool. And I guess the reason why they did that is because it is really, really good. It is a multiverse Spider-Man. It sets off like from the very beginning, you realize it's a new take on his origin story. It borrows some stuff from the MCU. So you actually see some of the sequences that involve Tom Holland.
Oh, interesting.
In animated form. Like there's one point where I was watching it and it's the Civil War moment where he's returning home with the DVD player. And but it's animated, but it's the exact same shot. So like you follow him into the apartment and he's talking to Aunt May. But when he turns the corner, Aunt May is talking with Norman Osborn instead of Tony Stark. And that's kind of the launch of the show. It's like, this is a different Spider-Man. This is one of the pivot points, but it's changed in this direction. Colman Domingo voices Norman Osborn. He's incredible as it is currently making a pitch to play live action Norman Osborn in the MCU. I think he would be amazing.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Yes, that would be phenomenal.
I mean, honestly, Colman Domingo can do anything. He can do no wrong.
It's interesting that they approached him to replace Jonathan Majors.
Yeah.
And then he turned
I respect his answer about not wanting to replace, like wanting to kind of do, I get that. Because you also have to think about the junket. Like, okay, well, I'm going to have to answer Jonathan Major questions the entire run.
Mm-hmm.
And that was courtesy of our friend Josh Horowitz.
It was. And on the Happy Sack Reviews podcast. I find that interesting for the Colman Domingo bit of it all, but also just that Marvel got to the point where they were reaching out to people and saying like, hey, if anyone's willing, would you guys help us out and replace Jonathan Majors with that? So Norman Osborn's a big part of this. Colman Domingo's great in it. And I loved all 10 episodes. I'll talk about it briefly after the show. I will say there is a point through this episode towards the very end where Jeff and I do switch over into spoilers. If you want to bookmark the episode, I believe 7 of the episodes are out right now. They're getting released in chunks. Like each week, 3 new ones arrive. And I'm pretty sure it's up through 1 through 7 right now. And then the next week, it'll be 8, 9, and 10. So you'll be able to listen to the spoilers at the end. It's only like two questions, I think, at the end where we get into some deeper stuff. But really, we talked a lot about his overall approach to the character, his history with the character, his thoughts on changes to the mythology and a lot of other really cool nerdy Spider-Man stuff. So hopefully you guys are into that. Here's Jeff Trammell joining the Real Blend podcast, just me this time, on behalf of your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Jeff, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm blown away, sir. I don't have words to express how much I love what you've created.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
I really appreciate that.
I've binged all 10 episodes and it's truly magnificent. I'm a lifetime fan of the character and your passion and understanding of him shines through in every decision. So congratulations first and foremost.
Thank you. I got chills from that.
Thank you so much. So listen, this is going to run next week. By that point, everyone will have seen the first 5 episodes. I want to talk some big picture type stuff and just get into your thought process behind the character and then maybe do a couple of spoiler questions at the end. But, you know, almost every discussion about Spider-Man has to start with Uncle Ben. And I want to get to your tweaks that you made to his involvement in Peter's origin story and how you wanted to approach using Ben, because the MCU went in one direction. The Raimi films were very traditional, obviously, and he's a very important character. So I just want to get some sense of your background on how you felt approaching him.
I think that for me, our approach to Uncle Ben was always early on, I didn't want to kind of step on any toes. I didn't know what the MCU kind of like version of Uncle Ben was. And I didn't want to, especially when we were still trying to figure out the show, like really hang my head on like, this is who he is. But as the show evolved and as it built out, it was always like, okay, I have an idea that I want to go with. And I have an idea of like what I think Uncle Ben means to Peter. And I'm trying to find the right words to say this because I don't want to spoil anything, but also like I know how much Uncle Ben means to so many people. I didn't want Uncle Ben in our show to be reduced to a soundbite.
Okay.
I didn't want him to be like a, you know, this thing happens and he says this one perfect thing that fully encapsulates everything for Peter, because I don't think that's who he is. I think Uncle Ben means a lot to Peter because he has been there throughout his life. He raised him. It's not just one lesson, it's every lesson that he's taught him. So for me, I always thought it was important that like you kind of feel Uncle Ben's presence through the things that Peter says about him or the things that Peter thinks about him. And I'll say that, like, as we go forward, I think there are going to be a lot more opportunities to really see Uncle Ben's influence on Peter. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of leave it at that for now. But okay. I know that's, like, a worry of some people, and that has never been, like, I don't want to erase Uncle Ben. I know how much Uncle Ben means to Peter, and I know how much he means to the fan base, and I think it becomes very evident as the show goes on how much he means to our Peter.
And then it's such a dramatic swing to then give his surrogate uncle, essentially, be Norman, who is the other important figure in Peter Parker's life always. And your take on him is so unique and so fresh. That, tell me if you think this is accurate or not. I was suspicious of Norman all the time, like from the very beginning. And yet it does feel like through the bulk of the show that people have seen so far, he means well. He does want to help Peter.
Yeah. And I think that's, to me, that was always the hook. You know, that's the thing that's interesting to me is, like, Norman is Peter's mentor, and every Spider-Man fan is like, this is going to go terrible for you. And even just having that, I think, allows us to make Norman such a nuanced character, because the only thing I want as you're watching that show, and I know it's hard, is to plant the tiniest seed of doubt. Because we are all coming to the show with preconceived notions about Norman, because we've known Norman, but also this is a different Norman. So is he the same, you know, is he the same guy that we think he's going to be? So just as you're watching it, you know, you're like, oh, well, I know he's bad. I don't trust this guy. He's evil. Oh, but actually that was really nice. Oh, this is really sweet. This is good advice too. I like it.
And really, that push and pull is really great through the episodes of the show. And of course, obviously the way that Coleman delivers them as well too, you know, has a bit of tenderness and also some menace, which is very interesting in his line readings.
He writes the line so well to where everything he says is like, it's so layered where you're like, oh, did he mean that sweetly? Or was that supposed to sound intimidating? Or was it like, you never really know, which is so great.
I'm glad that wasn't just me then. One of my favorite Easter eggs in this is knowing that even in another universe, Clef from Clef TV is still capturing live action.
Yes, yes. That was really important to me, especially he's the do a flip guy. He's also Clef. So being able to like bring him in our world meant a lot.
Yeah. When I saw him in the middle of the road in an early episode, I was like, is that the do a flip guy? is that Zach Cherry? So I guess this means I have to ask, in the MCU, do you know, is Clef on vacation in San Francisco when we see him in Shang-Chi?
I like to think that you see him in New York and he's just like, all right, there's too much happening here. There's aliens. There's all this drama. I'm moving where it's more quiet. Then he moves to San Fran, and like first day he gets there, gets on a bus and Shang-Chi shows.
He's done some martial arts in his youth, he said. All right, I want to get into my absolute favorite character in the show, which is Lonnie. So you see the promo images of it, and you assume Lonnie's going to be Flash Thompson, you know, like, and boy, do you just rug pull us from the get-go with the lab partner scene. Can you talk about, well, first off, just the decision to not do Flash, if Flash was ever considered, and the decision to not do him, and then your decision to put as much of the story that you do into Lonnie's character.
I will say that, like, once we realized we were going to deviate from a lot of things, you know, Flash is such a big part of Peter's Midtown story in the MCU. That was a thing where I was like, okay, well, if we're going to deviate, maybe certain characters won't pop up immediately or won't pop up in this series. So honestly, like, I never really thought, okay, we'll do Flash for this. But in figuring out, like, okay, now that we are changing kind of Peter's surroundings, who will fit into this spot? Figuring out, like, early on, we want to do something with Lonnie Lincoln. It was like, okay, well, he's kind of perfect. And in introducing him, I always thought of, like, I think every Spider-Man fan is like, to your point, okay, we know Flash Thompson, he's the bully, he bullies, you know, puny Parker, so on and so forth. And I didn't want to do that. I thought, okay, if I'm looking at this guy, my initial thought is going to be, oh, everyone loves him. He's so cool. He's the jock. He's this, he's that. So then just to even turn that on his head mm-hmm. and like, okay, also like he's very likable. Also, he's smart. Also, he's this. Also, he's that. You know, like that was important to me. So early on, it was like, okay, we're going to like delve into who Lonnie is. And so much of Lonnie's story is him kind of being the same, or I should say, two sides of the same coin with mm-hmm. Peter. Like they're both going on very similar journeys, but in very different ways. Mm-hmm. And those two characters, I think, to me, mean so much. And being able to dig into Lonnie and his environment, his backstory, and his circumstances, I think has always been really interesting. So just even him and Peter being so similar in a lot of ways, but so different, and that like one's, you know, one's the big man on campus at school, but once he goes home, life is completely different. Peter's kind of easily drifts into the background at school, but once he goes home, he's a superhero, you know, feeling those differences and the similarities as well, I think really makes for an interesting dynamic between those two characters.
Jeff, there's a point in episode 3 where you cut back to Spider-Man in action. He's fighting some of the goons who've gotten some of the technology. And I wanted you to stay with Lonnie's character and the gang mm-hmm. and his brothers. And it was at that point that I realized, God, and this is written so well and so character driven that, you know, I didn't think it would. And that happens multiple times through the course of the rest of the episodes when you cut to the action. And I'm like, no, please get back to the storyline because I'm really interested in what's happening over here. Can you talk about your emphasis on character and your need to make sure that the narrative was always pushing forward with these background characters that we grow to love?
Totally. I mean, I think that's the important thing is like, people are driven by characters because that honestly, that's what makes you care.
Yeah.
And it would be so, I think anyone, if they were to hear like, hey, Lonnie Lakin is almost a dual protagonist with Peter Parker on paper, you're like, what? But you see it and you feel it and you go on that journey, you're like, I get it. And so much of it is like, I want to make sure that these characters resonate because at the end of the day, when I'm thinking back about like, shows I love or movies I love, you know, very rarely is it like, oh, it's this fight scene between these two characters. Like it's always a character moment. It's mm-hmm. always a story moment. It's always like the heart or the anguish or the joy I felt. So I really wanted to make sure that like, as you're following Peter, Lonnie, Nico, Harry, Norman, like you know how they feel. And you can either resonate with that or you can at least see why they feel that way. Yeah. So I really appreciate you saying that. It's really cool to hear because I think that was always a worry is like, you know, are we spending too much time here or mm-hmm. should we focus a little more time on the fight scene? So hearing that, like, you're like, no, get back to this means a lot.
Hey, listen, I still love seeing Otto, you know, and I still love seeing Matt Gargan in a traditional Scorpion suit. Like all of that shit's amazing. But, you know, to that end, having written Norman now for as many episodes as you have, are you kind of surprised that the live action MCU hasn't used that character a little bit more than they have?
You know, I will say, I think it's hard to figure out how to use Norman in certain incarnations. And I think, you know, I won't pretend like it was an easy road to figure out what makes our Norman tick. Mm-hmm. But now that we have, I think that he's a really fun character. I personally would love it if our Norman were to pop up in the, I think it would be cool to see Coleman pop up in the MCU. But, you know, for now, I'm very happy with, you know, having him in our series.
All right. There's another character who pops up a lot and I just kept noticing him. There's a guy with glasses and white hair on his sides. Is he a reference to anybody? Is he someone special to you?
I very much want to say no comment on this.
No, come on. You got to tell me. I hit something.
There's someone who works with the show that very much resembles that person. So that's kind of our shout out to them. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. Because I knew it wasn't Stan. You don't have any kind of Stan Lee references in the show, do you, anywhere?
Not overtly, no. I think, you know, that's a thing that I also want to be like very respectful of. I don't want to feel like, oh, there's a Stan moment. There's like the kind of like trotting out of, like I would never want to disrespect Stan's memory. Yeah. But yeah, I think if there's a nice place to put something that honors him, I would definitely want to go that route.
I mean, his fingerprints are all over everything that you're doing here. Let's talk about the costumes. Let's talk about the costumes you get to play around with. The first one, obviously, the sweatshirt and the mask is, we've seen sort of iterations of that. But in episode four, you blow it all out. Like, you know, he gets the chance to get some Osborn tech, and it's not dissimilar to getting Stark's tech in the MCU. What were your inspirations for the visuals of the white and navy blue badass look that we got in episode four?
I mean, honestly, that was me as a fan being like, what are some really cool suits that I would love to see in this series? Mm-hmm. And I've always loved, the inspiration for that suit, the Future Foundation suit.
Yes. But
being able to like take it and put a spin on it. And also like the thing that I love about the Future Foundation suit is it feels very sterile. It feels very clean, mm-hmm. you know? And to me, I was like, that was a conversation we were having. It's like, okay, well, if this is a suit that is presented to Peter, it's not a suit he designed, but it's a suit that was given to him by someone who's like, this is what Spider-Man is as a business idea. it's not going to have the flair that Peter's suit would have with him knowing who Spider-Man is as a hero, you know? So mm-hmm. for me, it was always like, what's a fun suit that I would love to like see animated and at, you know, on television that hasn't truly been like done a lot, but also fits the need of what we have. And then it's just tweaking that to make it our own. So honestly, that was it. And then I'm like dancing around if I want to say this or not. There was a version of this suit where it could change colors to go into a night mode.
Ooh.
And then that was going to be inspired by the black and green big time suit. But we ended up needing to trim that out for time. But, so that was always the plan.
Come on, that's great. It's like a reverse flip of the one of my favorite alternate suits is when you got to wear the Fantastic Four suit with the paper bag on his head.
Yes, Bombastic Bag Man. Yeah.
I love that one so much.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on MyPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I also love, and talk to me about balancing this too, like, you don't have to do the traditional origin, but you go out of your way to include homages. I saw Crusher Hogan, you know, as he's flipping mm-hmm. through channels. Talk to me about still finding the need to, like, you know, put those nods in to let people know that, like, they're still part of this world.
Yeah. I mean, it's ingrained in me as like a Spidey fan to want to see that stuff. And even beyond me, like our crew, like everyone on our crew is such big fans of the character and just like everything that's come before it, whether it's the comics, the games, the movies, the other shows, like there's just so much and there's so much vastness to it. It's like, well, why not use it to build out our world? It's only gonna like resonate with other fans. They're only going to be like, oh, I know that guy, or I see this thing. And like, even beyond that, like our tie-in comic by Christos Gage and Eric Gapster, like mm-hmm. even that beyond the show is like involving the Enforcers, or Crusher Hogan appears in that as well. So yeah. Like Mountain Man Marco, like there's so many characters and we have the chance to build out this world. So I'm very much of like, you know, there's place for all of them. And especially as we go into future seasons, like there's so many more characters out there that like I am excited for our audience to meet for the first time.
Is it so hard to do press when you have done essentially season two and you're into three in your mind?
Yes, because I'm trying to not spoil everything while also remembering what happens.
Yeah, you need like talking points in front of you, essentially. So before I switch over to spoiler talk, where we can get into the little back half of the episode of the season, just as a storyteller, just as someone who sits down to write character, how impressed are you by how malleable Stanley's initial idea was? You know, that 60 years later, you're still able to take the raw concept and come at it from a completely different angle and still keep the essence of what's important to the character, but feature all these other different things that enhance it, you know, and tell it for a different generation. I'm blown away every time I see someone new take a pass at it.
It's incredible. Like, I can't imagine sitting down today, creating a character, and 60 years from now, someone else is writing that character. Like, yeah, that is insane to me. And like, the fact that Stan could do that, not just once, not just twice, but with so many characters, is like, you know, he's it's unreal. And you know, because I think that's the thing, like, he had these characters figured down to their core.
Yeah,
and that's always important. Like, you could strip away Peter's tech, you could strip away the spider powers, you could strip away the jokes and the awkwardness, but at the end of the day, like, he is a character driven by heart. He's a character driven by how much he cares and how much he wants to do the right thing, even if it means, you know, putting himself in the line of fire. And I think once you know that, once you figured out like who he is at his core, building out the world around him is almost easy, because he's such a dominant force in storytelling, because there's so much you can do with him. There's so much to go with him. There's so many places, like different avenues. The fact that there is, like, you know, 60 years ago, Peter, where he's a little more aggressive and a little more like, you know, watch what you're saying to me, buddy, versus like, you know, a much more like meek Peter versus like, you know, a little more rough around the edges Peter, and all of them are Peter.
Goes
to show how much, you know, how much range he has as a character, which is like, kudos to Stan.
To that end, did it take you a little while to figure out his humor? Like, if you don't get Peter's sense of humor right, the character almost doesn't work.
It's tough, because it's also like, we have to write Peter in a way where he can't just like do a bunch of references to things either. Where it's like, oh, he should say this. And I'm like, oh, well, he doesn't know what this thing is because it happened after this time point. But also, like, it's fun because he can just say, like there'll be plenty of times where we're just like, okay, we've written this episode, now we're watching this fight, and we're just doing like joke pass. We're just like, oh, he could say this thing, or he should say this or this, and just kind of like funniest joke wins. So that's also really cool. It's like, you just get to kind of like riff and Mystery Science Theater fight. Like, okay, go. This joke goes in now.
That's awesome. All right, let's get to a couple of back half of the season conversations. So and of course I'll keep all this stuff for episode specific. One simple word change spins the entire narrative on its head, which is, with great power comes great respect. I thought for a second you were going to let Peter go down a really dark path of Norman getting into his head and making him feel that this is all a selfish act. You know, can you talk about your decision to tweak the very famous line and why you wanted Norman to almost put that effect on Peter?
The base of this show to me has always been familiar but different. And I don't think there is a phrase that is more synonymous with Peter and with Spider-Man than with great power comes great responsibility.
Sure.
So again, familiar but different. And knowing that we wanted that phrase to come from Norman Osborn, knowing that he is Peter's mentor, he is, like you said, his de facto uncle.
Sure.
And, you know, knowing what matters most to our Norman Osborn, it would be, you know, having people respect you, having like kind of clawed yourself up, your way up from the dirt all the way to this empire, is having the respect of everyone. So being able to instill that in Peter, who is this, again, a very impressionable 14-year-old kid with so much power and potential. And, you know, like, how would he take this? So for me, very early on, it was like, well, you know, everyone's worried that Norman is going to turn on Peter. You know, you hear it, it's like, oh, he's going to turn on you. No, to me, it's always interesting is like, well, what if Norman corrupts Peter? That's the more interesting avenue. Mm-hmm. So having him as the kind of bug in Peter's ear, no pun intended, but like, and to say that, and to like see it resonate, and for us as the audience to see it and be like, that's wrong. That's the wrong lesson. Don't take that.
Yeah.
But you can't do anything but watch has always been very moving to me. So very early on, it was like, okay, this is the lesson that I want Norman to instill. And now it's, when's the right time to do it? Oof. And when will it mean the most?
Yeah, you terrified me actually when that was happening. That actually scared me because I really thought that's where you were going with it. And I'm really happy that the things turned themselves around. I laughed my ass off when you gave Harry the go get him tiger line. Thank you very much for that. Yes.
I can't even take credit for that. I have to give that to our one of our writers, Charlie Nooner. I remember reading his script for that. And then we got to that point and I was like, oh, it's perfect. And I was like, oh no, but like, he's not supposed to, but it's perfect. I get, we got to do it. Yeah. It fits so well.
Kudos. It's similar, but different. Exactly. Yes, like you're saying. Yes. There are two characters that are not part of the narrative. How do you feel about maybe Mary Jane Watson and Gwen Stacy being in this universe at some time? Do you see them as characters you want to explore?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, similar, but different, but how can I say this? I'd be very surprised if one or both of those characters don't appear in later seasons.
Okay, gotcha. I saw the name Ned Leeds on the board. You frequently are rocking an awesome goblin shirt when I see the interviews that you're taking. Exactly. What is your thought on goblins? How do you feel about goblins in general?
There's, you know, can't have too many goblins. Always got to have a goblin. you know, I think, again, there's a lot of goblins out there. There's a lot of characters out there to explore. Mm-hmm. We're open to exploring a lot of different avenues for Peter.
Well, and then there seems to be like there's to me, the history of Spider-Man, there's like a line going through it that is pre and post symbiote, right? The pre was very kind of grounded, more traditional, a lot of like street level villains. And then once we got to, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 298 around that time, mm-hmm. and the symbiote, it opened up to a lot more places. You have some symbiote action in here. I don't know. It's like, where do you fall kind of thing? Which of those stories do you like to tell more? Which do you think we might sort of see as seasons roll along?
I am very interested in a primarily grounded street level Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That's so much of what season one is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we deviate a bit. You know, there's a Doctor Strange. There's other, you know, as you mentioned, symbiotes and things. Uh-huh. But, you know, like, I think for us, Peter works at his best in a friendly neighborhood on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. We're not going into space per se just yet. So like for me, I think it's just, you know, especially with the world we've created, being able to like, I would worry that a character like Alani or Pearl or Harry might, I don't know how they factor into like a huge cosmic adventure.
Yeah.
So making sure that we stay kind of at ground level, it's always been about the neighborhood, as it were, mm-hmm. and kind of keeping things that way. And that's not to say that like we won't grow and evolve and there won't be bigger threats, but you know, at our core, I think it's always going to be about that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Jeff, how vital was it to get Josh Keaton involved?
From day one. Really? I knew, yes. And like, it meant a lot to me. It meant a lot to me that we were able to get him. I the role he's playing means so much to me. And I feel like it's another one, like I keep saying it, but similar, but different.
Yeah. All right, last one. I'll get you out of here on this. And listen, thank you so much for your time, man. This has been fantastic.
Same.
I am blown away. I can't say enough good things about this show. I'm so glad it exists, and I just can't wait to be able to revisit it over and over and over again. I want you to go over and just shepherd the MCU Tom Holland Spider-Man because you understand the world. If they gave you a shot at the live action, would you be interested? Does it just move too slowly for you? Like, what's, do you need a much bigger palette? How do you feel about maybe trying the live action?
I would love it. I love Marvel. I love Spider-Man. It would be a dream. I'm open to anything they would have me do, because I love this world and I want to play in the sandbox as much as possible, but especially Spider-Man for sure.
Gotcha. Well, listen, as a lifelong fan, I thank you again for everything you did for the character with this show, man. It's incredible. And I'm so glad that you're at the helm for multiple seasons. So thanks for coming on and talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
I would like to thank our good friends over at Marvel Studios again for setting us up with some time with Jeff, who I think is a super interesting guy. And I really like the fact that they're using animation for some really exciting things at Marvel. In addition to What If, this is a really great way for them to continue the Spider-Man mythology. I don't know. Have you guys had a chance to even pop this on at all? Have you had any interest in checking it out? Mm-mm. It's really cool in the fact that, like, yes, even I was like, how many times do I want to watch the origin? You know, do we have to see Spider-Man in high school? But the characters surrounding him are so well created, like so well crafted. There's a character named Lonnie who people will know if they've read the comics, but even the way that they sort of approach his origin, and he becomes sort of the tragic anti-hero in this storyline. And so there were times, and I said this to Jeff while we were having the conversation, where there was a Spider-Man fight going on and he was taking on one of the villains, and I wanted them to cut back to the Lonnie story.
Oh, interesting.
I was like, all right, this is just a routine Spider-Man fight. Get back to the storyline, which I actually care more about. And that's when I realized that this show was doing something special. Like, anytime that you're invested in the characters and wanting to see which direction they were going to go in, I thought that was fantastic. It also plays really, really well with just Spider-Man legacy. You get to see a couple of characters and villains that we haven't seen in live action before, but with really accurate comic depictions of their costumes, one being the Scorpion, who I think is somebody they might use later. Michael Mando played the Scorpion in Spider-Man Homecoming. He was from Better Call Saul. Terrific actor. Mm. And I think they might use him in live action sometime down the line. But little cool cameos. Charlie Cox plays Daredevil. That's been in one of the episodes up to this point.
Is there, do you think they made an attempt to get Holland to do the voice? Or
that's interesting. No, I don't think so, because everyone's voice is different and it's definitely a different Spider-Man.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a bit. So the origin, by now, everybody has seen episodes 1 through 8. If you get a chance, if you're watching the show, there's a bit at the beginning of the show where Doctor Strange opens up a portal and a creature comes through the portal and lands in this Peter Parker's world. And through that fight, the spider that bites him gets transported through. And Doctor Strange does this thing where he's like, we're not supposed to be here. This is a big mistake. And he gets his bite that way. Something's going to happen at the end of the season that will even tie deeper back into that. But it makes sense that this is not Tom Holland. They do kind of really set it up that, like, the Tom Holland universe is going in that direction and we're doing this sort of thing. Because Jeff Trammell's been told he's already greenlit season 3. So the story for season 2 is completely plotted out. Now they're animating it. And he is currently writing season 3, which made for a really difficult conversation for us to have, because even questions that I gave him that were like a bit spoilery for season 1, he would be like, let me tell you that I can pretty much guarantee that this person is going to do fill in the blank at some point. And I was like, all right, this has got to be really hard for you to tease this stuff out. Anyway, huge. If you're a Spider-Man fan, I think you'll really dig it. If you're a Marvel fan, I think you'll really dig it. I like the animation as well, too. But for me, it's the writing and the characterization that kind of won me over. I want to switch over to Captain America Brave New World and kind of use it as a transition point, because the reviews I read today were not good at all. But at least the ones that had something nice to say was due to some of the character writing in it. Like, they talked a lot about how they thought Anthony Mackie was really charismatic and that Danny Ramirez is kind of the heart of the film. Kevin and I got a chance to see 25 minutes of it. Gabe and Jake have seen the whole thing. First, Jake, I'll start with you. Do you agree with the reactions that were mostly negative? And do you also agree with the characterization comment?
No, I don't agree with the negative reactions. And listen, I think I'm probably one of the people on the podcast that tends to lean a little bit more negative in regards to Marvel, particularly within the last like couple of years post Endgame.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was good. Again, it's like it's you know, we complain about this a lot on the podcast. Like, it's not a very sexy review to just basically say like I liked it. It's yeah, a yeah. 3.5 out of 5. Like, it's flawed. It really wants to be Winter Soldier while mm-hmm. not having the quality of writing or the direction to back it up. But I thought some of the most interesting parts were that it sort of felt like we kind of finally indirectly got a sequel to Norton's The Incredible Hulk. A lot of loose ends from that film are tied up. Mm-hmm. Loose ends that I've always been a defender of that movie. I've always thought that that was the best that MCU's Hulk's ever been. Mm-hmm. Is the Norton Hulk. No disrespect to Ruffalo, but I felt like the Hulk in The Incredible Hulk is actually scary and a monster. Mm-hmm. And so I like that one a lot. So I like that tie in. Listen, I have an affinity for Harrison Ford, and I think he kind of steals the show. Like, every time he's on it, it's just like, damn, like, that's a freaking movie star, man. Like, he's, yeah, yeah. He, you know, and with all respect to, you know, some of the younger actors in the movie, like, you go toe to toe with Ford, it's just not going to be quite as good. And there's just sure. something about, I don't think this is a spoiler because it's in the trailer, but like, a movie exists where Harrison Ford turns into the Hulk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, right, you know, right. whenever I was 7 years old, you know, my Indiana Jones action figure, I used to turn him into the Hulk. And now I got to see it in a $200 million blockbuster on the big screen. Listen, it's, some of the script could use a little bit more polish. Some of the lines are a little like, okay, all right. Some of Mackie's delivery sometimes I found to be a little bit more flat than I think, you know. But for the most part, I thought the effects looked great. You know, Marvel has had, you know, I know a lot of the effects companies have complained that they haven't had the time. Mm-hmm. There were a handful of shots, Gabe, I'm curious if they stood out to you, where I was like, that's a reshoot. You guys definitely, and it's because it's basically, it honestly looks like Anthony Mackie standing in front of my weather chroma key at my news station.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. You know.
But only like maybe, honest to God, maybe like 3 or 4 shots. For the most part, I thought it looked nice. I thought it was colorful. The action sequence, the middle action sequence, which finally brings back that big thing from the Eternals that's sticking out of the water, looks fantastic. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It's not great. It's not a game changer. It's not going to be in anybody's top 10. But I've seen some of the Marvel movies that clock in the high 70s and low 80s on Rotten Tomatoes. And the fact that crap is getting a pass, but for some reason Brave New World is getting crapped on, like, makes no sense to me.
So Brave New World's at 52%.
That's insane.
While we were on.
That's crazy. Honest to God, it's like going to McDonald's and being mad that you weren't served a filet mignon.
If this was in the 70s, you'd be like, yeah, that sounds about. Yeah,
that sounds 100%. That sounds exactly right. Like, because we always complain about, right. Because Rotten Tomatoes is just, did you like it or did you not like it? I don't see how anyone actively disliked it. I really don't.
Unless you don't like Marvel movies. Like, I read the guy who wrote it for Roger Ebert gave it 1 star.
Yeah, I read his.
And it was like, what movie did you think you were getting into?
Right.
You know,
That's exactly the takeaway for me. It was like, I enjoy Marvel movies. And so I think that did a lot of favors for this. If you don't, like, I get why you don't, but that's nothing. Mm-hmm. It's nothing new. It doesn't really break any new ground for Marvel. It doesn't necessarily also like slip back into like old habits that are necessarily like rote, you know. It's fine. And that's okay. And I think Marvel needed a movie that was fine. Like, it was, I will say the one thing that it started off a little shakier than I would have liked. I was really worried at the start.
That opening action sequence, I was like, ooh.
The opening action sequence, I mean, the middle action sequence and then the third act is awesome.
Was it in Mexico? The stuff in Mexico where I was like, ooh, oh no, what's happening?
It was actively like bad. Like, it was, it wasn't necessarily that the choreography was bad, but the way they composed shooting the choreography just looked unconvincing. Yeah,
calling it a Disney Plus show would be an insult to Disney Plus shows.
Yeah, it was really
yeah. Ooh. But then it goes like that.
How's the exposition?
Thank God for journalists in this movie, because journalists deliver a lot of information that you need. Thank God for news anchors.
Like newscasters?
Yeah. Thank God for the news anchors.
Well, and they don't go like, they don't explain Falcon and the Winter Soldier in this, but they definitely, like, you know, we talked earlier on, like, is Marvel just going to go like, are they going to go full? Like, no, we're expecting you to watch these shows. And when you watch the movie, it's just picking up. or are they going to try to explain? And like, there's Isaiah Bradley, the Isaiah Bradley character gets like a, it only lasts like 15 seconds. You got to do it. It's one of those things where I'm like,
I actually appreciated it though, because it's been like what, 2 or 3 years since I've seen Falcon and Winter Soldier. So like, I actually appreciated the reminder.
It's literally a character walks in. It's like, oh, you're Isaiah Bradley. And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, I was experimented on by the government for 30 years. I was like, all right. I was like, okay. I forgot that. So like, oh yeah, yeah, that's a good, I did need to know that.
Listen, that's a tough thing that Marvel truly faces is,
Yeah.
They've got 37 projects that came before this.
But
you know, it's like,
there are good ways to do work in exposition. Like
sure.
And we discussed it before. Like, one of the best examples recently was Civil War, when they're on the way to DC and they're talking about the questions they're going to ask the president.
Yeah.
And you're told what's happening.
Oh,
through
you don't
the
mean Captain America Civil War.
I'm talking about Civil War.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, even with what Gabe is saying, there are better ways to work that into dialogue. It's like,
and I don't want to belabor the point. That exactly hits on what I'm saying of like, you should expect that, you know, from this literally like the 65th Marvel movie, you know, going back to the Fox days or whatever.
I know, like, you made that joke in the text thread last night, but I gotta be honest, I feel like there's been so many Marvel things that I seriously had to pause and go, is he joking or was it actually,
I think it's 65. Yeah, it's up there.
Wow, it's not that far. I mean, when you loop in the TV shows and everything else,
yeah,
like,
exactly,
it's a
lot. Yeah.
So a couple of
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, a few weeks ago when I saw the footage, and I think I had texted you guys after the footage, it was giving me Winter Soldier vibes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that came from, like, I always think back to what the Russos did on Winter Soldier, because it grounded this fantastical world in a very human way. Like, the bridge fight, the action sequences of Winter Soldier were like, they felt like the Dark Knight in a way, where it was like I was watching like real human characters. Like, and so there's a moment, not that there aren't human characters in the other Marvel films, but there's a moment in the footage that we saw, Sean, and it's now in one of the trailers, so it's fine to mention, where he's fighting somebody and the guy says, oh, did I hurt your rib or something like that, whatever he says to him. And I liked stuff like that because it kind of reminds you he's human, and it reminds you that he can be hurt. It reminds you there's vulnerability. It reminds you that he's,
because he didn't take the serum.
He could get killed in a fight, theoretically. So that the footage that I saw reminded me of that. Does the rest of the film have the Winter Soldier tone?
I mean, it's I feel like you got the generic brand of you know, you ever like, as a kid, you ever, like, my mom wouldn't buy me Lucky Charms, but she'd buy me like the store brand of Lucky Charms. Like, you're not getting Winter Soldier.
With like a Fortunate Gems. What were the
Happy Trinkets.
Yeah, exactly. You're getting the Happy Trinkets version of Winter Soldier.
So what we saw in the 25 minute footage before doing the interviews, I'm going to assume is the opening ish 25 minutes. Our scenes were not connected per se. It was kind of jumpy, but I still think it was what you saw in the beginning. So you guys said it was Mexico, but it was like, it's Falcon landing and they have to get a package, right?
Yeah, like some MacGuffin. It's a MacGuffin little plot.
Yeah. And then they bring it back to the White House, and we got to watch all the way through the Isaiah Bradley, you know, gets brainwashed and shoots at the president. All of this is in the trailer.
Yeah.
And then our footage ended with Isaiah Bradley running from the team, running from the Secret Service agents and all this stuff. And then Mackie confronting him out in the open and kind of saying, like, you know, I'll help you, sort of thing. And so I went back and rewatched the trailers. There seems to be like a two of them meeting face to face, like almost in a prison through the glass. We didn't see that in our footage. I'm assuming that's like shortly after this happens. And then Mackie, I guess, is going to go off and kind of figure out what happened to Isaiah. So
I did think the White House sequence was good.
Yeah, for sure.
At least in the footage. Good. I don't know how it's cut in the movie, but without giving too much away, I thought that whole stretch of film and then like the interaction between Mackie and Ford, all that stuff was really well done.
So I still feel like Brave New World is the movie that is the last of the Marvel movies to be affected by the delays. Like, it's the movie that they couldn't work on under the normal situations because of the strikes. And less COVID, you know, I think COVID was a bit of an issue, wasn't as much of an issue, but I think a lot of stuff disrupted this. I think by the time we hit Thunderbolts, and I hate to keep moving the goalpost for Marvel.
Thunderbolts like does look good, though.
The Thunderbolts trailer during the Super Bowl looked fantastic. That looked very fun.
It gives me Suicide Squad vibes.
Very much so.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's the only thing I kept thinking about is like, it was because it's like the.
But the good Suicide Squad, not the.
The Suicide Squad. Have we had a great Suicide Squad movie? I mean.
I like the gun one.
The guns was okay.
I will say, I don't know why you'd be listening to this if you were concerned about spoilers up to this point, but if like you don't want to know anything deeper, I'm probably only going to talk about the trailer, but just a warning. One thing that is really detrimental to this movie is how much they showed in the trailer. And I know I say that a lot, but Jake, I don't know how you felt about this. The Harrison Ford is the Red Hulk thing is like, it's like a reveal in the, like, it's like a thing that like builds and builds and builds and then they get to, it's not something that happens quickly. And so you kind of spend most of the movie just going like, okay, we're going from point A to point B to point C, but like, I know where this is going. They're like, ooh, what is this? Like, what is this mysterious thing that you would, you know, maybe think is akin to a Civil War type thing, but you know what it's leading to. So you're just kind of waiting.
Should they have given that away?
But I mean, we had the same talk with the Ragnarok. It's just like Ragnarok.
Yeah, sure. I think it's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Where it's a selling point. I mean,
people want to see it.
Yeah, exactly. But all, yeah.
And honestly, that's what a lot of people I know, why a lot of people want to see this movie.
I get why you do it. It just makes 50 minutes to an hour or whatever of the movie kind of just feel like it needs to hurry up.
Interesting.
I saw an interview with Anthony Mackie. I don't remember the outlet it was on, but I didn't realize this. He said something along the lines of like, this was like the first movie that's really truly his. Meaning he's the star and, you know, and normally he's with the other characters, you know, in a team. And this is, and you look back at his career, he is an extraordinary actor. And, you know, 8 Mile was his first movie. Hurt Locker was remarkable.
When he rap battles the Red Hulk, it's crazy.
Now that one, I would love to see that. But in all honesty, I'm rooting for the guy because I really do like him as an actor. Yeah. I think he's actually the footage that I've seen of the movie. There's that line in the film. I think is it Ford says to him, "You're not Steve Rogers. This is not Steve Rogers' Captain America. This is Sam Wilson's Captain America." So I'm rooting for the guy. I want this to be good. And I do think that he's great in the role. I just like you guys. It sounds like from what you're saying, the material surrounding him, the writing and the effects, and it just doesn't give him the vehicle to make a great film.
I mean, he's good. He's really good. He has a lot of great moments. I thought Daniel Ramirez, Jake, was like super charismatic, super fun to watch. Yeah. I thought he was a really
he's like
great...
the Tom Holland character from Civil War. Like that, that's kind of how he compared himself. And when I interviewed him, he's like, I'm the fan who's kind of taking you through the experience. Mm. Like I'm excited to be there kind of thing.
But here's sort of my concern is that like, I like the guy, I do. And I thought he was good in the movie, but like, you know, at this point, whenever they sort of introduce, I feel like a new Marvel hero in some degree, you have to question, okay, how are they going to stack up when the Avengers assemble? And let's be honest, like, you know, when it's time for Doomsday and Secret Wars, like I like the guy, but I don't see him taking the front line in terms of screen time whenever the A-team gets together to say.
That's interesting because also, I mean, I thought they were setting him up to be the leader. Like he's not going to be the leader.
He's going to be the leader of what?
The Avengers.
Anthony or Danny?
Are you talking about
Anthony?
I'm talking about Danny.
Okay, sorry. I thought you were talking about Anthony.
Also, I think one of the big complaints that I think we've all had, and not to rehash it too much, is the Marvel films just they lack stakes. And it feels like we're put into a puzzle of this one needs to happen so that this movie can get to here, so that this character can get to here.
And like exposition to me, that gets on like that's what they're making. Like that's
true. Is this one less of moving the big picture forward?
Oh, I think
the post credit scene, I'm going to be honest with you. You can just leave. it almost begs the point where you kind of just want to go, you know, you guys don't have to have one. Like you guys can just
wait.
None.
Did I see an article today that this is the first MCU film that doesn't have the starting Marvel
logo? I think it doesn't.
It goes back to the old logo, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't have the Marvel logo at all. Yeah, it's a stylized thing, but like it doesn't do that. Like dun 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 dun. Yeah. It doesn't do
so
that.
So they don't use Falcon footage. Like usually they bring the new character in and weave him through. Oh, no. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Just talking about Anthony Mackie for a second. I pulled up his filmography. Do you know what is really interesting? Dude is in so many things, like in an ensemble. Like,
yes.
He's not the leading man that often. Yeah. You know,
this is his first big one
ever. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I was really surprised at that because of how long he's been a movie star.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of him saying that on a red carpet. I'm like, this can't be the first leading role he's ever had.
It's kind of true. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was kind of the lead in the banker, right?
But that's like an Apple TV movie.
Yeah, and then it came out.
I thought of that too.
Didn't that come out?
And it's hard to feel like the lead when you're with Samuel Jackson.
Sam Jackson, Well, in the same way, it's, you know, I guess, yes, he very much is the lead of this, but, you know, he's also starring alongside Harrison Ford.
That's wild. What a career he's had. But like, what a career. No one's going to doubt that Anthony Mackie is a movie star.
Yeah.
But like, he's just been in ensembles. That's kind of crazy.
He's also great in Twisted Metal, that TV show.
I heard you talking about that. Wasn't it so much fun? Pain and Gain as well.
He's in Pain and Gain.
But he's not a lead.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You're right.
Interesting.
I was shocked when it was like a clip that came up on TikTok, and I'm like, that can't be right. And it's actually weirdly true.
To close the loop on the Hulk thing, because I mentioned this with Sean, and this isn't really spoilers. Mm. The Hulk stuff is an awesome payoff. Oh, like the Hulk action is the best stuff in the movie for me, and it looks great. Like it looks great, and it feels
He looks like Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and he looks like Harrison Ford.
That's kind of is it a decent amount, or like have we seen it in the trailer?
It was a lot more than what's in the trailer, but it's the big moments, that scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, the trailers is him like slicing through
the shield or something. Here's what I'll tell you. I brought a buddy to my screening and who's like a Marvel fan, but not like encyclopedic. Like I kind of had to lean over and be like that person's from this movie kind of thing. But he
needed
so,
more exposition.
He needed a little bit more exposition. Whenever there was a moment where Harrison Ford is walking up to a podium and he leaned over and was like, oh, it's Hulk time. Like that's how, like, because we've seen enough of like what the moment looks like to sort of here we go. This is it. This is the same.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Wait, what was the exposition we used to make fun of in WandaVision? The line, it was like, let me back that up.
Hold
up.
I forget.
We used to make fun of it because they
was like, hold up, Johnny. Yeah, something like that.
Can I ask, and Sean, maybe you won't want to listen to this because it's kind of spoilery. I will give a spoiler warning, but I want to ask Jake this. Kevin, feel free to dip out. This will be quick.
Okay.
Jake, the dilemma, the like predicament, the like the question that Sam Wilson has of should I have taken the serum?
Mm-hmm.
Is one that is complicated in that it feels like they've set the morals around that in a way that he can't.
Right.
And they do. And there's a great line, which I really liked. But like whenever he's fighting the Hulk, I'm just like, but why the fuck wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's happening. And I'm like, this is fun. But like, what?
Yeah.
In what world logically would you not say like, yes, like he's destroying this whole city. I need to be able to stop this.
That's when you just go, I've made a huge. Well, I mean, they even gave him that line in the moment. Great line. Like, why didn't I say, you know.
But I wonder, my question to you was, do you think they ever write it in a way where it's like, yeah, these guys need to all be on steroids? Because that's the implication.
Right.
You
know? Exactly. Like, because I think the idea is you got to have some a human element in there.
It's just tough to like. Yeah. To be like, yeah, he still would make that choice whenever he's getting punched by Red Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's
Sean. I have a quick question for you. And this honestly means nothing in the context of the movie. But do you ever like feel like you've seen a mistake in the movie and you're like, did I see a mistake or did I just blink whenever like the answer to my question? There's a moment where
is this spoiler? Or is this just
I don't think this is a spoiler. There's a moment where Captain America is handcuffed. And then all of a sudden he's not handcuffed anymore. And I don't know if I saw him like get, I don't know if I missed him getting out of the hand.
I think I know the scene you're talking about.
Because the reason I ask is the guy to my, not my buddy who I brought, the guy to my right leans over to me and goes, how do you get out of the handcuffs? Yeah. And I went, I don't know.
There's a funny thing, and unless there's anything else we can leave on this. There's not spoiler. I won't say when this happens or what's happening, but I've been cutting our package, our interview stuff that Sean did for this, and Mackie talked about the portals scene, and that he recorded his On Your Left line on his phone in his closet.
Yeah,
and there is a scene. The scene that Jake was alluding to earlier looks like it was recorded in someone's closet.
You think it looks that good?
It's tough. I mean, thankfully, it's like inconsequential.
Yeah,
but it's like oof.
I will say that when Mackie redid the lines for me, it was really cool. That was neat. Just to hear like his voice for a second, you forget that like, oh yeah, you're the guy.
Yeah, you're the guy. You're the guy.
You're the guy who actually says those lines that I listen to all the time.
There is something about it. We've all, knock on wood, we've all been lucky enough to have like actors like say their lines to us. But there is something about hearing them say it where you're like,
yes.
Oh, because you've heard it in pop culture for long. Yep. It's something as simple as I think we've all asked him about this, but like having Arnold say, I'll be back. It's like, I know you've said it at that, but you just said it to me.
He said it.
As we talk about this sometimes, because we all do junkets and eventually everybody's going to get a similar answer at some point or a similar story.
Sure.
But like Jake and I always texted, like, it's like, yeah, but they've never told it to us before.
Right.
And so when you hear it, it is. And we've had so many situations where like you get an answer, you go, I must be the first one who got this. There's nobody else. And then it's like the junket answer.
The Wicked Girls, like by the time they come back around for part two, what the hell is it? Because I feel like they've been doing interviews since November and they haven't stopped. Like what is there going to, there's going to be nothing left to ask them.
There's like a new movie though. There's like a whole second movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Come on.
I'm excited.
Kev's going to do 40 more minutes with Cynthia. Come on. What are you going to do? Don't cut him off. All right, let's throw a quick to a break. And on the other side, we're going to talk about the surging front runner in the Oscar campaigns currently. Kevin's favorite movie of the year, Anora.
Dune Part 2.
And we are back. So weirdly, because of the fires and a lot of the delays that took place, last weekend, there were a number of awards ceremonies that ended up landing very, very close to each other. Critics' Choice Awards was on a Friday. Saturday was both DGA and PGA. And Anora and Sean Baker had a time, like just surged. And so you guys might not know this, but we started the show as an awards podcast. And I know that all three of us are really intrigued by these movements and hadn't had a chance to really discuss this happening and what it might mean for the race in general. So let's just talk in general about where we're at and kind of what this stuff means, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the fact that the Emilia Perez, controversy might have really hurt that film overall and its run.
I think the question is, because my thought behind it is she was never going to win. She was never really a front runner. I do think it hurt the film in picture.
I agree.
I think the big question is, and I don't think the answer is yes, but do you think it hurts Zoe Saldana?
I don't think so.
I think Ariana's going to win that.
Oh, do you really?
I don't.
Interesting.
We'll get into that in our prediction episode.
Now, Kev, were you shocked that Anora won these? Because it wasn't really picking up picture prizes and other things leading up to this.
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of those strange things. So Anora was my favorite movie of last year. I've seen it 4 or 5 times. I think it's brilliant. And if you get a chance to watch it multiple times, it gets better every single time you watch it. It is just a remarkable achievement in cinema. But there's that moment in the award season where the film that you loved starts not winning the major things.
Sure.
And I just thought Anora was not going to win anything, maybe screenplay. And I was just, I was just going to be content with that. Cause obviously there's so many other films, but obviously with the PGA win and the DGA win, and then the Critics' Choice win all in the same weekend, it propels that film to frontrunner status. And I'm just happy for it because it did feel like it was like falling away.
Sure.
And I do think it's the best movie of last year, and I would love to see that film win because it's such an entertaining film. It deals with very heavy thematics, but it's such a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone about this today. It's like that's the kind of movie that like you could show to anybody and they'll be entertained by it. Mm. Obviously, it's for adults.
Suffered.
Yeah. But it
probably
is
not Jake's mom either.
No, they watched it.
Did you show Menorah? Yeah.
I didn't watch it with them. They watched it.
But
that was not a gather the family around kind of movie.
I mean, I really would love to see Mikey win too, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think,
but there is a real scenario where Sean Baker walks away with 4 Oscars.
So screenplay,
directing,
yeah,
picture and editing.
You don't think they'll give directing for The Substance?
I don't know. He won DGA.
Yeah.
See, I think, yeah, he did win DGA. I thought if anyone was going to take director, it would be Brady.
Yeah.
I thought maybe they'd sort of recognize what he accomplished in Brutalist. I was
Do
trying
you think
to find Norse.
Nosferatu takes cinematography?
No.
I hope Dune does.
Yeah, Greg Fraser. I mean, everyone on here, how many times have you all seen Norse? Just once?
I've seen it 3 times.
Once, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't understand. It so much. It's I love the first half, and the minute they start looking for the kid, I lose interest in it.
That's
I
so
lose
interest
in it.
It
I
was feel number
like
4.
I feel like the second half of the movie takes place in real time. Like it grated on me the longer it kept dragging. And then they get to the point where they find him, and then all the stuff that's at the end of that with his parents showing up, and then they go to Vegas to get the annulment. And I was like,
oh, it's so good.
This movie's got to end. Why is this dragging on and on? And I think she's great. I really did think that she was fantastic, but I was not. I couldn't get into the second half of that movie. So I will give it another shot because Michelle does want to see it. She hasn't seen it yet, so I will give it another shot. But the first time through, did nothing for me. And so I'm really fascinated by this. The Critics' Choice Award to me was a big surprise because Anora didn't win anything else the evening of Critics' Choice. Our director, who were all members of the Critics' Choice, went to John Chu, which was kind of fascinating. And when he won director, I was like, oh, wow, we're going to give it to Wicked.
Yeah, I did too.
And it was weird because our voting happened before the Emilia Perez headlines really started generating a lot of heat. So I wondered if that was going to impact what people voted for. And then, like I said, once John Chu got for director, because the funny thing with Wicked is we were even having a conversation of like, well, that might win Best Picture, but they're not going to give it a Chu, right? Like, you know, there's so many other strong directing candidates and you can make a case for so many of the other ones, but maybe John Chu even gets left out. Then he wins CCA and then his movie doesn't win. That's a really weird way that shook
this
out.
Whole season's been weird. It's just been a weird award season.
But Sean Baker on Saturday night won DGA and then had to run over to the PGA to accept Anora winning that one. I mean, like you said, it's a wild season, and I think that this kind of means that it's a front runner. But one thing that makes me so angry, and Jake, I want you to comment on this. The people who make their living, and God bless them that they've been able to do this, but the people who make their living being Oscar pundits.
Yep.
Are so full of shit.
It's the same way that, you know, we do fantasy football. And if you're familiar with how fantasy football works, there are always these projections. We project your points, your running backs can get 14 points and then they get 3 no one knows.
No one knows.
Everyone's just reading the tea leaves as they're happening. Like, it's easy to say Anora is going to win now because it won all those things. But 3 weeks ago, it was Emilia Perez. And 4 weeks ago, it was The Brutalist.
The Brutalist.
And then 4 months ago, it was Anora.
Yeah.
Like it was, you know, at a certain point, it was Wicked. Like, no, remember for a brief hottest of seconds, it was a complete unknown.
Yes.
Like, no one knows. And it's perfectly okay to say no one knows. But the thing is that there's so much power in a major publication predicting something to be Best Picture.
Sure.
That's the business of it. Because people who are the Academy voters or whatever voters, if they see something is the favorite in their mind, they think, well, I at least got to watch it, or maybe I need to file in line and get on board. So sure. There will always be the business of these prognosticators, but they don't know any more than anybody else does.
No. And it doesn't make me mad that they do it, because like I said, God bless them. Sure. If they're able to build a salary.
I enjoy it. I enjoy prognosticating. Yeah.
But it's the weight that's put on their opinions that drives me. Now it currently drives me crazy, because if you go back and look at what they're saying, like Sean Baker for DGA, I went back and looked at Gold Derby and the people who made their predictions. He was 4 or 5 on most of their lists.
Yeah.
He was nowhere near the top for DGA. And then he triumphs of DGA. So it's like you're just throwing darts at a board.
Yeah.
So that drives me nuts. Kev, I have seen some people make the argument that it's if a movie's going to win picture and the story is structured primarily around a character or a performance, that person usually carries through. I understand Demi's narrative is really strong for The Substance. I wouldn't be mad if she won. Substance was my number one. But I think if people who want to see Mikey win, they're kind of pinning their hopes to that belief.
Yeah. I mean, how do you give Anora everything except Anora?
Right. Yeah. I know. So we'll see. But
we'll see what happens.
That's where we're at currently. And we will still do an Oscar predictions show when we get a little bit closer to the ceremony, which God help us still hasn't happened. And it's
I don't know about you guys, I love this shit. I'm ready for this award season to be over
every year though at this time, right?
Yeah, but this one in particular, maybe it's just because I don't particularly I'm not obsessed with, I don't know, it may just because Dune's out, so I'm sort of let's just move on.
Okay.
Well, here, what I'm trying to say is when it's not about me, I care a lot less about it.
Oh, Jake, you don't have to tell us that. honey, we know that.
Whose takes are they, baby?
Good point. All right. Head to the comments down below and let us know. Are you going to see Captain America Brave New World? If you have seen it, what are your thoughts? Share the information with us down below. We'd love to hear from you guys, leaving your reviews. In the meantime, until we're back with a brand new show, you guys can follow us on social media. You know where to find us. We're on Instagram. We're on Blue Sky. We're on TikTok. We're on all the different places the kids are hanging out these days. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Real Blend. Until then,
Dunkirk.
I'll stick with Dunkirk. Why not?
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.